Radio City with John Grayson and Rob Ross, and I am Rob Ross here on our 52nd episode, our one-year anniversary show, a momentous occasion. I'm incredibly, exceedingly, astoundingly proud of this, and let me welcome my venerable co-host, Mr. John Grayson. John, what are your thoughts on our 1 year into this magnificent enterprise?
Well, I'm excited that we're still able to do this after a year, honestly, and looking back at some of the growth, and we'll talk about this a little bit more later on, but at where this podcast has gone since its inception, following the crashing and burning of the Overnight America radio show, and this is the Phoenix rising out of those ashes, and it's been brilliant. It's a lot of fun, and that's the thing that I think I look forward to this every week, because you and I get to sit here and talk about things that normally, you know, you get into, but not at dinner parties. And, you know, it's a very freeing kind of thing. So I didn't know what to make of this whole podcast deal when we got into it, but I love it.
You know, what's wonderful about it is that, you know, as much as I enjoyed our working together on Overnight America, it was always a very constricting by the CBS standards. We had to self-censor, which I thought we were very good at almost from the moment we began doing it on a regular basis.
Right.
It was very time-limited. We had to have very specific criteria to talk about because it was a quote-unquote pop dose segment. But to be able to take what we had and the foundation of what we'd already built and cemented and turn it into a podcast, I love the fact that it has indeed grown. You know, the first episodes of Radio City were, in fact, really just extensions, albeit, you know, a little bit freer as far as the not so necessarily censored and a little bit longer in time format. It was very much still like our segments on Overnight America, but over the span of this year, it has, in fact, become what I think I'd hoped it would become all along. And now it's reached a point where I just see this as getting better and better and better with every week, every situation that comes along that becomes fodder for our discussions, because there is both happily and tragically a lot for us to talk about. It's just something that I could not be prouder of, and all I see it is just being bigger and bigger, and certainly our audience has come along with us. And that is the most fantastic and fascinating thing of all.
Definitely.
The people that dug what we were doing on Overnight America because they read Pop Dose and they liked hearing it, or whatever the case may be. Maybe it's our chemistry. Maybe it's a combination of all of the above. But we have an audience and they love it. And they've told two friends and they've told two friends and so on and so on and so on. So here's to us. I have a celebratory can of Canada Dry ginger ale for this occasion, and we are good to go.
Excellent. And, you know, I think it's pretty apropos that as this will appear on Pop Dose, it will be the beginning of National Brotherhood Week.
Oh, the Protestants hate the Catholics, and the Catholics hate the Protestants, and the Hindus hate the Muslims, and
everybody hates the Jews.
And everybody hates the Jews. I had to look up and find out when National Brotherhood Week actually was, and it turns out it's the third week of February, so here
Wait,
we are.
That actually exists? That's not a joke?
It used to. It hasn't really been officially observed in the United States since about the middle of the 1980s. But yes, from the era of the latter stages of FDR right up through the 1980s, it was actually observed as National Brotherhood Week.
I blame Tom Lehrer.
It's all Lehrer's fault. What a brilliant, brilliant man he was. And anybody who doesn't know the song that we're referring to with National Brotherhood Week, go watch it on YouTube right now.
Then you're a communist.
Exactly. And speaking of which, so, Rob, what's going on in New York City?
Oh, dear. Okay. So, in this, I don't know what you really want to call it, political climb or socio-political climb that we find ourselves in, there was a story in Staten Island about how a traditional father-daughter dance had to be postponed because it was considered to be not all-inclusive because of children who are gender-confused at the moment, consider themselves, quote, trans children, and thus took it upon themselves or had their parents take it upon themselves to raise a hue and cry with the Board of Education and the local school boards. Now, I have a very serious problem with this. And let me preface it by saying I don't have children. If I had a daughter and she came home and said to me, "Dad, there's a father-daughter dance. Will you take me?" Of course I'm going to do it because yeah. I'd be both pleased and honored to do that for my child. You know, it's a traditional thing. I'm going to put this out there very bluntly, and I'm going to try and say this in a way that I think people will understand my bluntness. I've never had a problem with people who consider themselves, you know, tranny or trans or whatever that whatever the hyperbole is for the week, because everybody loves a label.
Right.
I don't have a problem with it. But I have a problem with the way that now children are allowed to become, quote, gender confused, and their parents, instead of trying to find an avenue to formulate whether or not that child really is in that mindset and that's the way they were naturally programmed, or it's just a phase, I have a problem with the parents' neglect, because what you should be doing when your 11, 12, 13-year-old child is saying, "Well, I'm a boy, but I'm really a girl," and vice versa, you take that child to a psychiatrist. I don't want to, and I'm not demeaning anyone, but let us go back to the fact that when sex change operations became a thing of reality, part of the criteria was you had to spend a year under a psychiatrist's care in order to do this. Now, this is a fully formed adult, but that was in a formed adult's mind, makeup, etc. When you have a child that's just going bonkers, you need to take that child for professional help. At the same time, whether or not your child is a boy in a girl's body or a girl in a boy's body, it's irrelevant. You do not have the right as a single entity to destroy not only tradition, but a good time, a simply nice time for all other people. You know, if my wife and my son had a mother-son bowling day, am I going to be pissed about it because it's not including the dad who's the traditional bowler?
Right, right. Know? Well, yeah, and there's a couple of things about that. I mean, I looked this up, and when you told me about this, it was the first I had heard of these father-daughter dances. I didn't know they existed anywhere. But apparently, they're not only being postponed in New York, they're being canceled around the country for the same reason. And what I think people have to get over is the idea that just because you're not invited to something doesn't mean you're being insulted. There have been times where people have been excluded from things as an insult, as a fuck you. You can't come in here. You can't sit at my lunch counter. You're black. You can't come into my club. You're gay. That has happened. That is not what this is. And there's a difference, and there's an easily definable difference. So for somebody to say, "Oh, you're insulting me by not inviting me." No, no, we're not. We're just saying if you don't fit the what we're trying to accomplish with this thing, by your own admission, then don't come. If you want a different dance for something else, we'll do that.
Right. But we'll find and create an avenue that everyone can join in on, or people like you can all take part in and feel comfortable in.
Here's
whatever, whatever it is that will at least assuage the whole, I have to make an issue of something that really isn't an issue to begin with.
Right. Well, and here's what I'm getting to at the heart of it all is I obviously never went to a father-daughter dance because I was never a daughter, and I did have kids, but all four of them are boys. So that's probably why I didn't even know these things existed. But now that I know they existed, I don't feel insulted because I never got to go to one. I don't have a daughter.
I don't have children.
And I'm okay with that.
You know what? People still wish me Happy Father's Day.
Right.
Why? Because I have two cats.
There you go.
You know, and people look at that in a very sweet and in serious enough light that these are my children. And now, that's a wonderful thing. Is it necessary to include me? Technically, no. That you do, that's great, and I appreciate it. Listen, people wish me Merry Christmas all the time. You and I discussed this.
Right.
People wish you Merry Christmas all the time. We've wished each other Merry Christmas. And at the same time, we both don't celebrate Christmas technically because everybody blames us for everything.
Exactly. Well, yeah, and I don't think because people wish you happy Father's Day because of your cats, I don't think that means you take them to the father-daughter dance.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't, you know, I don't think I like going out, you know. I would probably take Roxy because she's very friendly and outgoing, but, you know, she's also kind of too tiny to reach the floor.
Yeah. Yeah, it would make it tough, especially during the tango. So
you have a bad back like I do.
Yeah. So that said, yeah, it's just too much again. Nobody was insulting anybody. That's not why this started. You know, it's one of those things that you hear from people where they say, how come they need a Miss Black America pageant? Well, when they started the Miss Black America pageant, black women weren't allowed in the Miss America pageant, and that was an insult. They did that on purpose. Nobody started the father-daughter dance to say, ha-ha, fuck sons. That's not why that was made up.
Or, you know what? Fuck you if you have a kid who suddenly thinks he's a girl.
Right. It didn't because start out that way.
Because that was so common and prevalent.
Yep. Yeah. And as you said, I mean, you even, the way things were done to make sure that something wasn't a phase, because we all went through phases. And listen, if my kids said, I want to grow my hair real long and dress in dresses, I'd say, okay, fine. Do whatever you want to do, man.
Yeah, David Bowie, have fun.
Exactly. Right. It's your thing, man. Have fun. I mean, I used to do crazy shit with my hair and had a mohawk and all that stuff. And okay, so no problem. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to making serious lifelong changes to yourself physically, that's something that needs a little bit more scrutiny.
Especially if you have a child that's young. The key word is child.
Yep.
We're not talking about a teen. We're talking about the cusp of teendom.
Yeah.
You know, the whole preteen thing. That parents can be that – it's an odd and almost criminal combination of negligence and too much indulgence at the same time.
Right. Yeah. This is a very different subject, and I acknowledge that. But do you know much about Tracy Gold?
The actress?
The actress, yeah. The one that was on Growing Pains.
I know that she had eating disorders.
Right. And
her sister was on Benson.
Exactly, right. That was Missy Gold, who was on Benson. And I didn't know this for a long time until I saw an interview with her about that. And this will show you how much these body dysmorphia issues are serious, serious things and the kinds of consequences they can have when they're not treated by somebody who knows what the hell they're doing. Is that Tracy Gold, when she started going through the issues with bulimia, the reason she was doing it is because she was going through puberty. And she did not want to. She wanted to stay prepubescent. And she thought if she got real, real skinny, then she wouldn't develop breasts and she wouldn't have hips and all of the other stuff that goes along with that. That's why she was starving herself. She wanted to stay a little girl. But she didn't know what that was. She didn't know what she was doing. All she knew was, you know, if I get real skinny, then I'll still be cute to everybody. So that's the kind of shit can happen when you've got something serious going on with your own body image and you can't define it. You can't talk to anybody about it. And what happens? Well, like Tracy Gold, you sometimes almost die.
You know, as a child, I started to, because I come from a family of people who basically went from being thin to being overweight at a certain point. It just seems to be part of the family chain, the family lineage on my mother's side. And at 9, I started to get a little on the porky side. And from 9 till 20, I was a fat kid, which made my teen years even worse because teendom, no matter how you slice it, is hell. You may think it's glorious. Maybe in hindsight, in a lot of ways, after you've gone through the pain of it, it is a lot better than you think that it was. But at the time, it is just absolute excruciating hell. And you know, when it took until I was actually 20 years old to finally get the light to go on. I didn't think to talk to anyone slightly learned or knowledgeable. Couldn't talk to my parents about it. You know, took the verbal lumps from a lot of people as fat kids do. And then one night in a conversation of some, I don't know what you want to call it, but just some, you know, emotional outburst finally of frustration. My cousin, God bless her, who's only a couple of months older than me, said very simply, lose the weight and you will feel better. You will feel physically better. You will feel emotionally better. You've never thought about it and you've never done it. And I think if you think about it and you try it, you can do it. And once you do it, you will see your life will change. And I know that sounds shallow. She was very matter of fact about it. I know it sounds shallow because I know you as who you are, and you want people to like you for who you are, but they're not that smart.
Right.
And I guarantee you, once you lose the weight, you will have more friends and you will definitely have a lot of women. And she was right about every bit of it. And it wasn't fun and it wasn't easy. Yeah. Not by any stretch of the imagination, because for the first time I had to do something that I'd never done. Instill and inflict and engage willpower of my own. You know, don't eat things that are going to cause problems, because there are a lot.
Right.
You know, and then we're talking about in the 80s at a time when this wasn't even so much of the topic that it has become since, you know. Our bodies are a thing that we don't really take to understanding unless we're fortunate enough to have either parents or an entire family unit and a support system around us that has such a genuinely enlightened scope of a decent balance between nutrition and exercise and also a positive mental attitude.
Yeah.
Because that really does go hand in hand with it all.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's just none of it's simple. And I guess that's what we're getting to in all of this, is none of that stuff is simple. And it cannot be boiled down to an issue that surrounds a dance. And it's stupid to think that that's going to make it all better.
It's shameful, too, because now what you're doing is you're drawing lines in the sand that hadn't been there before.
Right.
And unfortunately, when you see the responses from people, especially here where it actually happened, it has become now a quote-unquote political issue. It is seen as a left versus right kind of thing. And suddenly people who had been left-leaning are now very much leaning towards the right, because it's a case of
backlash.
Okay, you know what? You really don't know when to stop.
Yep.
Enough is enough.
Yeah, and that's always going to invite that kind of backlash, and it's needless and pointless, and it gets nobody anywhere. And I think that, again, it goes back to something you and I have talked about many, many times in the past, which is we're dealing now with an entire generation of people. And in fact, now we're into the second generation of people, because my generation, I think, was the first one who have never really had it tough. Never. Our parents did. Our parents had to go to Vietnam and fight. And their parents had to go to Korea or had to go to World War II and fight. And they had, you know, their parents probably lived through the Depression too. And they had all kinds of shit go wrong. And people got spat on who shouldn't have. And all of these terrible things happened. We never had it that tough. We think, everybody thinks, oh, you know, if you've never really had it tough and one thing goes wrong, you freak out. Oh my God, this is so horrible. Nobody ever told me no before. Well, the world hasn't told us no in a long time. And what has that gotten us? Well, it's gotten us people who are anti-vaxxers. It's gotten us people who are social justice warriors. It's gotten us people who think that little tiny issues are massive things because they've never seen a big issue. They've never had to wonder where their next meal was coming from.
You know what it is? Generation X has begat Generation E.
Yep.
The entitled have grown up now to this point of I want, I want, I want, I want.
Right.
You know, it's all about me. It's all about the self-serving, self-congratulatory, look at how wonderful I am, give me what I want, or I'm going to make accusations, I'm going to point fingers, I'm going to pass the blame onto somebody because I didn't get what I wanted, because somebody told me no.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And when you see that anything can be had, and anything can be had relatively easily. I mean, for crying out loud, the 55-inch television at 4K that's hanging on my wall downstairs cost less in real dollars than the 19-inch console color TV that my parents bought in 1968, okay?
Right.
And those dollars that they used to buy that TV would cost today probably 10 or 15 bucks. So yeah, there's not a whole hell of a lot you can't get. So what do we have to do? Manufacture problems to bitch about.
Right. Well, you know, it goes hand in hand with our conversation from last week when we were talking about Warner Brothers cartoons. In a moment of nostalgia, it made us go back, as we both did, and this is for our listeners, and we both posted on our Facebook pages the opening theme from the Bugs Bunny show. Why? Because it's a great memory.
Yeah,
it's a
right.
joyful memory. And a mutual friend of ours pointed out the fact that this was when cartoons were cartoons, when Saturday morning meant something, and when we weren't a bunch of weenies, as you put it, which was absolutely correct and accurate.
Right.
And I said as the follow-up line, yeah, because in those days we'd ride our bicycles, we'd fall off our bicycles, we didn't wear helmets. If we fell off and bled, you know what happened? Especially if our friends were around us, we'd laugh a little bit. We'd, you know, kind of bite our lip at the pain, wipe our dirt, blood, and gravel-covered hand or whatever it was off on our jeans, get back on and continue riding, because that's how you did it.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I have friends who are a couple of guys I know who I just think are the most wonderful people in the world, and they're married to each other. And I was talking to one of them one time about some issue or other that had come up in the gay community, and he was talking about how what a bunch of horse shit it was. And he said, and I said, well, you know, why do you think that so many of your friends complain about this stuff and you don't? And he said, it's simple. I know people who are at Stonewall.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you brought that up, because that's become a conversation between my wife and I, because I don't know if they're broadcasting out in St. Louis, but there's a commercial for a new medication that is for people who are HIV positive. And I guess my problem with this commercial is very simply that it almost normalizes something that should have already been eradicated.
Yeah.
That's number one. I worked with AIDS. I mean, this is not a self-congratulatory moment. This is a point of fact and why it's relevant to this conversation.
Background, yeah.
I worked with AIDS patients back in the 80s, okay, when the word AIDS was a dirty, dirty word. You know, you got a lot of dirty looks for working with people like that, because they were considered pariahs and lepers.
Not to mention the fact that people still believed you could get it from breathing on somebody.
Or shaking their hand.
Right, you know? Right.
But this, what I don't like about it is this commercial normalizes something that should not be considered normal or acceptable anymore, because it's a disease that should have been gone. But my friends who are in the gay community are of either our age range or older, and they – those who were at Stonewall, those who lived through those first harrowing days of AIDS, who fought, and a lot of them and their partners or their own friends and contemporaries died from AIDS. Their anger towards this new generation is for the fact that they're no different. And this is the key thing. They're no different than anyone else, because they're just as arrogant, just as bold, and they go out there. Oh, well, now that there's a pill out there, even if I'm HIV positive, it's okay because I can take this.
Right.
No. It's irresponsible behavior. Still, you're bitching and moaning about shit that is complete. You know, they bitch about things that these people fought hard for. You've got everything you could possibly want. Now you want more?
Yeah.
And at the same time, the trans community has done a great disservice now to the gay community. And the gay community, certainly the older gay community, wants nothing to do with them. Because it's now making them look like exactly what they fought against. They didn't want to be considered freaks.
Yeah, right.
And these people are doing just that. I'm sorry, but it's like my wife said. If you're a guy that looks like a woman, that you can't really tell on first or second glance that you're a biological man, it's fine if you go pee in the ladies' room. I don't have a problem with it. But if you're a dude in a dress with a beard and you're saying you're a woman – get the fuck out of here.
All I can think of right now are those guys from the Bud Light commercials that were dressed up like the hogs that were trying to get into ladies' night during the Redskins Super Bowl year.
I'm telling you, it's we're living in a world where people have just gone batshit crazy.
Yeah.
But their batshit craziness has now got consequences for the rest of us.
That said, they now live in an era where the president of the United States is an absolute nightmare. And there's been a lot of movement on that front over the last couple of days. In fact, now Rod Rosenstein's deputy resigned Friday. So nobody knows what the hell's going on there. I've got a sneaking suspicion. She said, well, I got this really once in a lifetime offer from Walmart. Really? Oh, I guess I can see why you jumped at the chance then. But what it seems like to me is that she sees it coming. She doesn't want to be put in a position when Donald Trump fires Rod Rosenstein, which he undoubtedly will, so that he can install somebody. It's a Saturday Night Massacre all over again, so that he can install somebody who will fire Bob Mueller. She doesn't want her shoulders to be the first one that falls on. And I totally understand it. But again, it's a pretty easy to read roadmap.
Every day, has I think in so many ways, and maybe I'm overstating the obvious, has become untenable with this administration.
Yep.
Because the main thing that everybody, quote, wants, but as you and I have talked about also, is not going to happen, is they want him out of office. This country wants him out of office somehow. An impeachment is not going to happen. I'm sorry, that you know it, I know it. Anybody who has enough basic schooling understands how this works. You can't just will it to happen or wish for it. The thing is, every day with this administration, it's something else that is just so – it's beyond reality at this point, because now it's over a year that some other form of bullshit, misdoings, misgivings, I never said that, all the lies, all the cover – it's been an administration of cover-ups from the moment it came in.
Yeah, and it's just tiresome.
Right. It's – at this point, it's emotionally draining. It's certainly not funny. You know, there's – and at the same time, I don't intend to beat a drum for the other side, because they are more than filled with their own problems, let alone their own ineptitude and inefficiencies and improprieties and everything else negative. I'm walking right now very happily – as a complete political independent. I have no affiliations with any parties. I see them both for what they are, and they're both equal. They're both horrible. And anything that's going to come out of either party is horrific. And anybody who will tell you that, oh, it would have been better if Hillary Clinton were president, the only difference between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump is you probably wouldn't hear on a day-to-day basis the way you do about Trump, how awful she is as a human being and what kind of scandals are scurrying underneath the wet boards that make up her table. Because believe me, she would come in with so much baggage, it's not even remotely funny. It would probably be far more damaging to the morale of this country, because Hillary Clinton on her own was a polarizing enough individual, let alone her husband. But, you know, you bring her back into the fore. And let's not forget, we've had already 25 years of people really disliking the person that we know of as Hillary Clinton.
Right. Well, and add on top of that, what everybody's looking for now is what's going to happen during the 2018 midterms and how much ground is there to be gained by the Democrats in the 2018 midterms. And like you said, I mean, party politics aside, because who gives a shit? But if it had gone the other way, if Hillary had gotten in, if she had won that election, what I can guarantee you is that the right-wing sky-is-falling bullshit machine would have gone so far off the rails that she would have caused a further losing of ground in the Senate and in the House for the Democrats. We would be seeing exactly the opposite effect, and where they had no shot whatsoever at controlling either House during the last couple of years of the Obama administration, it would have been even worse. That ground would have slid farther and farther away, and we would have gotten farther away from the center. So, you know, there's consequences to everything. Nothing is a panacea. But what Donald Trump has been doing now for the last couple of weeks, if he hasn't been doing this for his entire first year in office, is anything he can possibly do to avoid his job, to avoid governing, because he doesn't fucking do anything. You know, it's just, that's the maddening part about it. And the only thing anybody can ever seize on is, did you hear what he said? I don't care what he said. What he says doesn't accomplish anything. And the latest batshit crazy thing that he tweeted doesn't mean anything. So don't tell me that, you know, he didn't show enough sympathy for the women that his former secretary, who was beating the first couple of his wives and is now dating Hope Hicks, what he said about the women and what he said about him. It doesn't make any difference. It doesn't do anything. So why are we focused on it?
Because it takes away from the fact that for him to do it is because he doesn't know how to do the job.
Right.
He's incapable of doing it. And that's the obvious, the short and easy answer that nobody likes, because...
And he doesn't want to learn either. He has no interest in it.
Right. He never intended to be president.
Right.
That he won is a very bad fluke and accident. And the bottom line is that we're going to keep going through this. We're on a treadmill, and we're going to stay on this treadmill until 2020 at the very least. And you're absolutely correct. As far as this year's midterm elections go, I seriously do not see the Democratic Party making this incredible ground surge.
No.
And picking up either the House or the Senate because of the way they've gone about doing things themselves. All they've done really is to serve to piss off more people to get out and vote against them.
Right.
And in some cases, that might include me, depending on who they throw out there for candidates in these upcoming elections.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of it is going to depend on Donald Trump. But, you know, again, when you have a situation where the stock market, you know, he had been out there almost every day of the first year going, oh, look, the stock market's going gangbusters. Well, yeah, all you have to do is say, I'm going to lift regulations and the stock market will go fucking bananas, which it did. And so this week it underwent a correction and it lost, you know, it kept going up and down and it lost 1,000 points and then it lost 500 more and then it gained a lot of that back. And everybody was saying the same thing, everybody on the news. Well, what's Donald Trump going to say now? Is he going to own this? Is he going to own this stock market? Because he's been saying that all of the gains were because of him. Is he going to say the losses are because of him too? Who gives a shit? It doesn't matter.
He's not going to. I mean, the same way that Obama did. And when the stock market finally began to correct itself in 2010, a year and change after he'd taken office. Because remember, that first year of his presidency, nothing had changed really from the Bush administration.
Right.
Stocks were still very much down, if not plain tepid. And, you know, unemployment numbers hadn't changed or started to trickle upward or, you know, go in a positive direction and drop. The point being is that Obama didn't talk about it. And I'm not a fan of Obama by any means, but he didn't talk about it.
Right.
That's the whole point. There was nothing to talk about. It was – I hate using the phrase because it's so – you know, throwing everything off your shoulders with such ease, but it was what it was at that moment. And this is it is what it is moment. But Trump is a showman and a showboater.
Right.
And if people haven't figured that out, that's your problem. That's not for the rest of us to deal with, because anybody with a half a brain who has seen and heard Donald Trump over the last, oh, let's say 35 to 40 years, especially if you're a New Yorker, know exactly what kind of big-mouthed asshole he is.
Right, right.
There's nothing surprising at all.
That's what it comes down to, is nothing is a surprise. And when they say, can you believe what the president did today? Yeah, I can, because he's an asshole, okay?
Yeah,
so
it's Donald Trump. He's not even I hate the fact that he does have that title, that he is the president. But to me, he's just fucking Donald Trump.
Right.
He's the guy I've hated since the 80s.
Yeah.
And I'll always hate him.
And, you know, the other thing this week that he did, or over the last 2 weeks, is this mention of a possible military parade down Pennsylvania Avenue. And again, everybody knows what this is, because you know, he said, well, I saw one when I was in France. It has nothing to do with what he saw when he was in France. Kim Jong-un gets to parade his missiles down the road. How come I can't parade my missiles down the road? I want to show that my dick's as big as his. Well, you know, first of all, why don't the two of you just lay him out on the table? We'll get a ruler, and then we can be done with this shit once and for all. But yeah, I mean, for them to even lie about that, because they can't help it. They lie about absolutely everything. Still, though, it was up to Washington, D.C. It was up to the city government in Washington, D.C. to say, no, we are not doing that. Not in this town.
Well, the thing is, just very simply, when it comes to the military, to me, that's an insult to the military. You know, it's bad enough that we've taken Veterans Day, a day that was very solemn and very sacred, and we've negated it to the point where, A, nobody even gets the day off from work or school anymore. It's just another sales day, you know, for those who do have the, quote, holiday.
Right.
You know, veterans keep getting short shrift from our government, which that's the biggest contradiction of all, and I really hate that. If you're going to give veterans a military parade, you give them in every big city on a specific date, you know, and you do it for every veteran that is still alive and with us. If there's a World War II vet, by all means. If there's a Korean War vet, by all means. If there are Vietnam War vets, by all means. For the ones that were in Iraq the first time, Desert Storm, yes. Those kids who went over to Iraq and Afghanistan, yes. That's all there is to it. Our military deserves to be treated like gold for the shit that they have done for us,
right,
and continue to do for us. And they deserve not only our respect, but they damn well deserve the funds that are not going to them.
Well, yeah, but I mean, remember, Jared Kushner fixed the VA. Two, three, four.
Jared Kushner's death. So,
yeah, well, yeah, he fixed the VA right after he fixed the Middle East. You know, there's no more conflict over there. He was tasked with doing both of those things, and he was going to have them done by the first week in office. So I can only assume.
Let's talk about the Middle East for one second. There was good news. Some Hamas guy blew himself up accidentally. I think he shot himself in the face.
Very good. Excellent.
That to me, that's worth its weight in gold. You know, I'll give you 2 shekels for that one, you know.
Yeah, that's right. You can have your 72 raisins on top of it. So, yeah, and that's fine. But the whole thing is so stupid because that's the problem. While all of this crap is going on about, oh, let's have a military parade that everybody knows isn't going to happen, what's happening with the VA? Nothing. The lines are getting longer, and the number of people who are not getting the care that they need is increasing, and nobody's doing a thing about it because nobody works in this administration. Nobody has to.
You know what? When it comes to the VA, it seems like nobody in any fucking administration seems to work.
Exactly. Right. That's the thing.
Obama did shit for the vets.
Nothing. 8 years worth.
Bush
nothing.
Did shit for the vets except bring home a bunch of dead vets.
Right.
Clinton did nothing for the vets. And who was it at one time that was in charge of the VA? What's his name? Oh, yeah. Comrade Bernard Sanders of Vermont.
Yeah.
Just for that alone, fuck you, Bernie.
Exactly. So, that aside, good thing, though, is we're not the only ones who got problems. Of all places, Poland decided to put itself front and center in the news this week. What happened over there?
Well, first, a Polish joke. this is a visual, so you're not going to be able to see this. Hey, John, what's this?
I can't wait.
A Polak putting on antiperspirant.
Okay, fair enough. But yeah, this deal with, oh, don't say we were colluding with the Nazis. First of all, did I miss something? I mean, France colluded with the Nazis, and they still don't really like talking about it, but everybody knows they did it. I was always under the impression that the Poles were the good guys and that the Free Poles actually did a hell of a lot to help the war effort, including the Great Escape.
This is very true, but apparently for those that were, in fact, deep in the collusion with the Nazis, you know, like the Kapos and the Sonderkommandos in the death camps, you know, like Auschwitz,
yeah,
which is located in Poland, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now it's illegal to say that they did it. You will go to jail if you say they did it.
Why?
You cannot bring facts to the table. This is now illegal in Poland. Yeah, all right. Way to go. You know what? That makes me never want to eat kielbasa ever again. Not that I ever did, but you know, no, I definitely won't.
Right. Well, and I don't know if you caught this one, but there's now a guy running for a congressional seat in my state of Illinois. Thank God. Yeah. Thank God he is not anywhere near here. He's in Cook County, not Skokie, curiously enough, but he is in Cook County, and he's running in a congressional district unopposed for the Republicans. So I'll tell you what, if you ever decided that you wanted to be in Congress, you still wouldn't win because there's no way a Republican's going to win a seat in Cook County, but you could at least get the support of the Republican Party for the nomination by running against this asshole, because the last thing the Republican Party wants is for an actual Nazi Holocaust denier to be running as a Republican, but he is, and this guy...
Although, we have to correct something right there. He's not an actual Nazi because he's not a German.
Because he's not German. Neo-Nazi.
He's a Nazi sympathizer... Or admirer.
Right, right. Thank you very much for that. But yes, he is, and he's exactly the stereotype that you would think of. He's like a 70-year-old, you know, malcontent, old, doughy, white guy fuck who has nothing going whatsoever. So this is the only thing he can think of to do. And, you know, like I said, it doesn't matter who the Republicans run in that race. He's going to get his brains beaten in the general election. But what it does is it reminds people once again of that fantastic line delivered by John Belushi in the Blues Brothers so many years ago. I hate Illinois Nazis. And that's the only good thing about this story.
And now a poem by Henry Gibson. You know, see, what's great is that you and I get these little sub references and immediate in jokes and responses. A lot of our audience won't, but don't worry, we are more than happy to explain them later on. We're good at explaining stuff.
Exactly, you know? Right.
Not mansplaining, it's called We Actually Were There. You know, it's called cultural reference.
Yeah.
You know? Of history.
Well, you know, I'm glad you said that because there was another thing that I posted on Facebook this week about 70s movies and their soundtracks. And I was happy to see your voice as one of the ones who piped up liking what I had to say, because if you ask somebody, I think if you ask 100 people what 70s movie defined the 70s soundtrack, most of them would probably say Saturday Night Fever. I maintain Slapshot.
That's a little bit Saskatoon, but you're asking the wrong guy here. You know, that's like, you know, putting the bull in the china shop kind of thing. You know, I mean, there are a couple of good soundtracks though from the 70s.
Oh, how about FM?
How about Shaft?
Yeah, definitely.
And quickly followed by Superfly.
Right.
You know,
Curtis Mayfield. Ugh.
I mean, fuck! I walk in the room and the theme from Shaft plays. It only makes sense. You know. So, of course, there's two for you right there. But Slapshot, hell yes. Absolutely yes. Let's not forget, Slapshot was filmed during the bicentennial in 76. It came out in 77.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
So it's the perfect midpoint of that decade.
Yeah.
You know?
And it had, I mean, in addition to all of the Fleetwood Mac, because there was a ton of Fleetwood Mac on that one. What else was on there? You mentioned a little bit South of Saskatoon, which was just a kind of a one-off funny thing.
But a great song, nonetheless, because that's the one that stays with me, along with, of course, Maxine Nightingale.
Maxine Nightingale, that's where I was going. I was like, that song, if I cannot hear that song without seeing the Chiefs bus roll by in my head.
Yes, 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 yes. Indeed.
But
you know what's funny though is you put something up like that and somebody always has some kind of like obtuse, they think they're in the know, so they think they're being funny or ironic kind of answers, but it's not really in league or in concert with the whole point of what's posted. You ever notice that seems to be really prevalent now with people?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I mean, I put up a couple of things during the week and it's like, were you even paying attention? At all? To what I said or what a couple of other people said in the process?
Right. Yeah, there are people who are at a level off of where I won't say a level lower because that's, I don't know. I mean, for all I know, they're thinking more than we are. But yeah, it just doesn't seem to connect. And I'm not sure exactly what that is, but it does tend to be the same folks over and over again. But, you know, the music thing. It brings us into some new music. We actually have some new music for the show this week because it's been a little while since we've had somebody come up with something that's really wryly funny. And I'm going to have to defer to you on this one because you know a whole lot more about her than I do. But Amy Rigby's got a new album out and you reviewed it for The Dose this week. Take us back through it. Where did Amy Rigby come from?
Well, she's been around for quite a while, over 25 years. The first time I ever saw or heard her name was she was in this all-girl a cappella kind of group that did punk covers called The Shams.
Oh, that's
they
cool.
Actually opened up, the first time I saw her, they opened up, I should say, for That Petrol Emotion, who were my favorite band at that time, at New York's version of the Marquee Club. And they were actually really, really good. They were very, very good. She was married to Will Rigby, the drummer of the DBs.
Oh, okay.
And by the way, they also have a daughter named Hazel, who happens to be a very talented musician, by the way. After their separation and divorce, she put out her first solo album, which has now gone on to become something of a legend, Diary of a Mod Housewife. And she put out a song that's become something of a cult favorite, called I Dreamed I Was Dancing with Joey Ramone.
Ah, nice.
It's a catchy song. And what I've always found really appealing about Amy Rigby is, A, she's the kind of girl you always wanted to date, but the bonus of dating someone like her is that she also could sing and play guitar. You know, you know, she's smart, she's pretty, she's funny. Did I mention she's smart? That's probably the biggest charm about her. She's a very smart writer. You know, she gives great interviews. She's interesting. You know, so she's had a very nice and very steady solo career. You know, she's put out albums one after the other. She's also now married and works with, on many occasions, another legend and an absolute favorite of mine, Eric Goulden, a.k.a. Reckless Eric, the man who gave the world such great and classic songs as the timeless Broken Doll, a pop song, Take the K-A-S-H, and of course the song that everybody seemed to cover and nobody got it right, I'd Go the Whole Wide World. The Monkees covered it on Cool It, and why Mickey sang it, I'll never know. It should have been Davey.
Yeah.
It would have only made sense. But they've worked on a lot of things together, and she has a brand new album out, and it's called The Old Guys. Which, yeah, it's kind of wry, but there's, funnily enough, I think there's an underlying concept. I don't know if this is meant to be an outward concept album, but it just seems to be kind of a look back of having had this career, and she mentions playing in Pittsburgh, but there's a song called Playing Pittsburgh. Nobody tried to hold me back, they held me back and held the door. I've been around this world.
It's the only way they can get them back to town. I lack self-esteem. It's a Pittsburgh thing.
She's a Pittsburgh native.
Yeah.
So, you know, that all ties it in together. But the great thing about this record is it's very concrete. You know, it has a definite sound to it. It's almost deliberately underproduced. It's very stripped down.
Her vocals are just dry.
Yeah, they're dry and they're up there and you hear them nice and clean. It's like you're in the room.
Yep.
That's what for somebody who's as keen on production, and I mean big production as I am, especially when it comes to vocals, those who can pull off that dry in-the-room vocal production sound and style, I give you full credit and full marks, because for me, it's got to have lots of reverb. It's got to have that big echoey 60s effect to it. Otherwise, I'm not going to be happy. But that's me.
Yeah.
When I hear somebody who can pull it off and do it flawlessly, more power to you. But it's, you know, at best, you may get two guitars, bass, and drums. And the bass and drums here are really prevalent, especially the really propulsiveness of the bass playing, which I love that on this record. It's nothing fancy. Nobody's walking, nobody's doing, you know, Chris Squire or McCartney-esque bass lines. They're just, it's solid and melodic, you know. And to a degree, a lot of it is kind of, it's hypnotic. Like the first song, which this is a fantastic title, and if anybody argues it, you're an idiot. It's called From PhilipRoth at gmail.com to rzimmerman at aol.com. Okay, but the bass line on it sounds like a heavy duty version of Good Day Sunshine. It starts with this kind of but going along in a steady rhythm, you know.
Yeah,
it's just a really, really good solid album. You know, her voice is terrific. I just there's something really embracing about her.
Yeah,
you can't help but have a crush on her and the way she sings.
You know, and I agree fully. I mean, I love the sound of the song that you've got linked on the page with the review. And the first thing that struck me about her voice is she doesn't sound like anybody. I didn't have an immediate, oh, okay, yeah, she reminds me a little bit of. No, she is of herself very much. Mm-hmm. And yet it was something new to me. And I like that. I like when something new comes along and I kind of dig it right from the outset.
That's the thing. You can't help but really be taken from the get-go. She has a natural charm in her songs, in her songwriting, in her style, in her delivery.
Yeah, it's very good. And I'm looking forward to hearing the rest of this one as well. So definitely want to check out Amy Rigby if you haven't yet, and go back through some of the older catalog as well. On the subject of women you have a crush on who are performers, now I get to talk about one of mine. Because of all things, she decided to leave acting, at least for the time being, and concentrate on a run for Congress. Diane Neal, who played Casey Novak on Law & Order SVU, and is, boy, really, really nice to look at. But outside of that, I'm not sure if she's got the chops to win a congressional seat. This one's back in your neck of the woods. What the hell's going on here?
You know what? I played a doctor on TV. That don't mean I can do surgery in the morning. Meatball
right.
surgery, okay?
Uh-huh.
I mean, for God's sakes, really? This goes right back to what you and I have said almost from Jump Street. Where does the line between fiction and reality begin and end? You know, it's one thing for Donald Trump, the reality TV star, to be president. It's another thing entirely to have played a DA on TV and right. now think you're going to run for Congress.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just a regular guy in the regular guy look sitting here at home doing a podcast with a friend. Yes, we have droves and droves of fans and disciples and worshipers, as well we should. But you don't see me making a run for any political offices. You know, just because I can speak knowledgeably about something does not mean I should be writing legislature for it, because first of all, we all know that if I was to run, I'm going to run with an eye for the White House, and that means the presidency will never exist again, because it will become a full dictatorship, and I will absolutely get the gallows out, get the guillotines out, get the firing squads ready. I'm coming for all of you.
Yeah.
I'm going to lay waste to every motherfucker on the planet. But,
and I'm kind of okay with that.
Right, because you're going to be there with me. You're going to be signing the orders and getting the okay, you guys are going to Illinois, get that Nazi fuck. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but the point is that I'm saying to you, I can think about it. That doesn't mean I'm going to do it. The days have gotten to the point where people are thinking that they can actually do the thing. It's like, I'm not really a car mechanic, but I slept at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
Yeah.
What it is with people, I don't know. I don't know what it is. The bravado, the delusion, you know. Look, if she went to school for a degree in law or government or civics or whatever else that could parlay itself into something that makes it viable for her to run for Congress, okay. But listen, I had problems with the likes of Sonny Bono running for the
Fred
Senate.
Fred Grandy.
Clint Eastwood being the mayor of Carmel.
Yeah, Fred Grandy, really? Gopher from the Love Boat,
Fred Grandy,
was in Congress.
Yeah. I mean, all of these people.
Ronald Reagan.
No. Unless you're a current politician. Well, let me just say one thing about my presidency. Everybody loved me. Everybody will always love me because bedtime for Bonzo. And I outlawed Russia. In fact, I think we started bombing them right after I outlawed them. Uh-oh. Tommy's coming. I got to go answer the cake.
Good
Bye.
Good old Grandpa Caligula. Good night, Grandpa. Yeah, it's just so bad. And yet, you know, and she says she's going to try running with no party affiliation whatsoever, which means no party support. And the thing is, you know, everybody wants to be Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Well, there's a documentary, if you haven't seen it, I know this guy personally, although I probably shouldn't say that, they did a documentary called Can Mr. Smith Get to Washington? And it was about a guy in Missouri, in St. Louis County, who his name just happens to be Jeff Smith, and he was not the Frugal Gourmet. That's a different guy. but this guy tried to run for Dick Gephardt's seat when Dick Gephardt retired, and he was a political nobody. I mean, he literally was an unknown, and he did what you're supposed to do when you're a political unknown. He went door to door and knocked on damn near every door in St. Louis County, and almost got himself elected. He came a couple of hundred votes short, if memory serves correctly, of ending up in the United States Congress. So when he lost that election, He decided to run for the Missouri State House instead. That election he won in a landslide. See if you can guess where his next stop was after the Missouri State Legislature.
What did he skip over?
He didn't skip over anything. He went straight to prison.
Ooh. What charge? What happened?
Violating campaign law. He was playing fast and loose with the campaign money. Yeah. And so he violated campaign laws because he was a political novice and he was something of a sleazebag as well. And so he ended up in prison. But that's the real end of that story. It's not the guy sitting there reading the phone book in front of Congress and making a big stand. You don't get to do that. You don't get to do that in the state legislature, much less on the national scale. This idealism is cute, but you figure for, what is she, 41 years old, Diane Neal?
Something like that.
I don't even,
it's not even so much the age factor or how much it's what do you know?
Right.
What kind of background do you have what is your qualifications? If you don't have the qualifications, you don't belong there.
Yeah.
Period.
Right.
You know, a lawyer should not be trying to be an automobile mechanic. A doctor should not try to be a fisherman, etc.
We've seen this movie. We know how it ends.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And it's not funny. It's cute.
Although,
and by the way, we all saw what happened to Mr. Smith when he went to Washington.
Right.
So,
yeah,
that was fiction.
Exactly. And that movie had an end too. But the thing is, though, if you happen to see any of the campaign commercials for Diane Neal while she's running, can you send them to me? Because I can watch them with the sound down.
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, good. All right. Oh, so bad. But so that's happening. And we'll, of course, keep track of that as time goes on. And who knows? I mean, she may make some waves, but in the meantime, she's at least, like we said, really nice to look at. There is one other thing, though, and I wanted to get into this because we hack on the press all the time because they're completely ineffective. And they're just as distracted by the shiny things that are Donald Trump's tweets as anybody else. I mean, everybody's fallen down on the job. And it's not because journalists are bad. It's because journalists are expensive and nobody wants to pay them. So when you had the Washington Post doing things like it did in All the President's Men or doing things like it did with the Pentagon Papers and the new movie, The Post, when those things were actually happening, look at that newsroom. It's full of people who are being paid very well to do what they do. Nobody pays those guys anymore. So those guys instead have gone into academia and are getting paid big sums of money to tell young journalists or young aspiring journalists what they should do when they get out of school. But there's no money in it. So, you know, people go into public relations or they go into one field or another, but they don't go into journalism. So the real talent pool is extremely shallow at this point because there's no money in it and nobody can make a good living. Let's say you are the best journalist in the world and you break the story that sets the world on its ear. First of all, what are you going to get for it? Well, not a lot of money. And you're also going to get hacked on by everybody who thinks that you're full of shit simply because they're on the opposite side of the political fence. Oh boy, where do I sign up for that gig? And so we have now a situation where they have pared these newsrooms down to the point where nobody works there anymore, and now they're starting to sell themselves off. Newsweek, who knows? Jesus, in the next month, there may not be a Newsweek. The LA Times sold itself off. All of these papers are starting to dwindle and die, and we should have seen it coming when 20 years ago, if you looked at the front page of any major newspaper in the country, with the possible exception of LA, New York, Chicago and DC, what you would see was a front page full of wire service reports. Nobody had their own staff of news people who were going out and breaking local stories. They were just rehashing shit that they got from the Associated Press wire.
Well, the problem though with right now though is the fact that something like the LA Times was sold to a biotech company.
Right.
I mean, where does that come from? How does that work?
Where's the leadership? Where's the leadership for somebody like that? There isn't any.
But then you get something, a smaller, long-standing, necessary community paper, like the Fitchburg, Leominster, Sentinel, and Enterprise, closing out its offices, physically packing it up because they're just going to be online.
Right.
I mean, that's a death knell in American journalism, not because it's this one small paper, but because it's happened and it's never getting discussed. I think there was the Rocky Mountain Sentinel went that way. One of the San Francisco papers went that way. And nobody ever seems to pick up on it.
Right.
You know what?
Yeah, and there's got to be an online model. There's got to be a morning after. There's got to be an online model that will still allow you to pay somebody for what they do. And nobody's been able to figure it out yet, but it's got to be there. The one, curiously, when it comes to the local front, especially in smaller towns, the one place where it's really being done well is the patch. And I don't know how many of these things there are around the country, but they said, well, if nobody else is going to do local news, and we don't want to be an alternative paper, we want to talk about the things that are really going on in the local community. Let's do that, and let's set up these smaller newsrooms that are full of people who care about the place where they live, and we won't have anything about Donald Trump, and we won't have anything about Congress or the stock market. It's simply going to be the local news. And they're the ones who, when a big story breaks in a small town, they're the ones you got to know.
It's funny because here our local newspaper, which has been around since the 1800s, the Staten Island Advance, it seems like the combination of doing what's right as far as small town local news as it's supposed to be reported, but it's done in such a slovenly manner because it's all late.
Yeah.
It's like, where were you last week when that story actually broke?
Right. Yeah. You remember when, there was a big story. There were two big stories in a row in the town in Michigan where the Sikh temple shooting was. This is going back 4 or 5 years. And maybe even longer than that. But right after that, there was another mass shooting like a mile away from there where a guy walked in. And it turned out it was an outcropping of a domestic. He walked into a massage parlor, shot his ex-wife, and then shot a couple of other people and then ran. And the one place where they were doing news at the moment about breaking stuff that was happening on those days was the patch in that town. And I thought, damn, they're actually doing real journalism and talking to the cops and all of that and putting it out there for everybody to see.
Yeah, the only time you get quote unquote breaking news as it's currently happening is on TV.
Yep.
And even then, TV news is just as bad because if you watch it, your local, you know, the only way to get, you know, obviously local news is watching the good old-fashioned major three networks, you know. And in my case, I usually watch CBS because they're the only ones that aren't fluffy or yeah. as fluffy as NBC or ABC. And New York One is not fast enough, frankly,
hey,
as far as breaking news goes.
You live in New York, though. At least you've got Ernie Anastos.
Do we still have Ernie?
I think Ernie's still around. Either that or he's out fucking that chicken.
Oh, God. No, who do we have now? We have nobody of merit, really. So,
really?
Yeah, New York News pretty much sucks on every level. See, the problem with New York One, which was wholly owned and created by Time Warner Cable, once Time Warner Cable sold the enterprise to Spectrum, Spectrum decided to put their own stamp on it. And the one thing that was really good about New York One News is that every 15 minutes on the hour, they would have your local news. So if you're watching the Staten Island feed like we are,
right.
you've got Staten Island-specific news. And
that's
if you're
cool.
in Brooklyn, you've got Brooklyn-specific news. They don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
They took away those segments.
Yeah, well,
they do a lounge, the boroughs thing. Buried towards the end of the half-hour broadcast, maybe.
Yeah, because it got too expensive. They had to hire somebody for all five boroughs, and they thought, well, we can cut it down to one and just say, eh, we'll call it, you know, local New York news. That's crap.
Every single one of the reporters that I have watched over the last, I'd say, decade of watching New York One with regularity, especially in the morning, because that's the only time you're going to get straight news. You get immediately the headlines, the weather, the traffic and rail reports, and then you get the news stories of the day.
Yeah.
You know, 15 minutes at the half hour, watch the Staten Island report, and if I missed something as far as sports went, sports was at 20 to 25 minutes on the half. So in 30 minutes, you got everything worthwhile instead of these fucking human interest stories that always get wedged on CBS, NBC, and ABC, the fluff. that goes into these stories.
Right. Well, and in St. Louis, we are, I mean, you're in market one. We're top 20. I want to say we're 19 or 18, but, you know, it's big enough to have real news, and yet there isn't any. You know, it's just as bad. It's shooting after shooting after shooting after shooting, and here's the sports. And that's really all you get. And there's nobody doing any investigative journalism. The only investigative guys that they have are the consumer investigative guys. You know, we found out somebody was ripping off the community, right. So we went and stuck a microphone in his face. Those guys. There's three or four of them around. But in terms of real investigative journalism about what's happening, you know, the way the city's being run, et cetera, there's none of that. The only place where that is, there's one guy who works for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch newspaper who's pretty good at it. And he's a bulldog. And, you know, he's still young enough that he doesn't care that he's not making any money. So
once upon a time in New York City, there was a young reporter on ABC Eyewitness News named Geraldo Rivera.
I've heard of that guy, yeah.
He delivered a powerful, groundbreaking piece on the atrocity that was known as Willowbrook Daycare here on Staten Island, where, you know, the retarded and mentally enfeebled were kept in the most horrific, inhuman conditions. That story, that investigative journalism, the film footage that they got, brought that place down and closed it. Okay?
Right.
It also brought John Lennon, you remember him, the communist hippie Beatle,
yeah,
out of retirement to do two specific benefit concerts for Geraldo Rivera's. It was called the One-on-One Charities, to help these kids, these people, you know, in a time that they were going to need financial aid, that he went, you know, went and performed these concerts. You know, that was investigative reporting, you know?
Right. Where is that now? And
right. The gold standards are all long gone.
Exactly. And it doesn't matter where you are, which is what I was getting to. That's why, you know, small town or smaller market news, you get past market 20, 25 or 30 and forget it. You're going to get nothing but young kids just out of J school who are on their way, if they're any good, to Atlanta. That's where they're going to end up. They're going to end up in an Atlanta, or they're going to end up in a Dallas or a Houston or someplace like that. Nobody is going to stay there. There is a guy just died within the last month or two, Irv Weinstein. Irv Weinstein was Channel 7 Eyewitness News in Buffalo. He was the anchor for, 40 years, something like that. I mean, it was just there for a long, long time. And you know, he was good enough to move away. He didn't want to. He was fine, you know, and everybody watched Irv Weinstein. So those people don't exist anymore. You're not going to go to some place like Columbus, Ohio, and see a guy on the evening news who's worth a shit, who's been there for 30 years. Not going to happen.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, the people that I grew up, unfortunately, they're all dead now. But, you know, we had the daily reporters that you could set the proverbial nightly news clocks by. You had on CBS Jim Jensen. You had on NBC Chuck Scarborough, who I don't see that often anymore.
Yeah.
On ABC, of course, you had Roger Grimsby and Bill Buttel. You know, they're all gone. And people in that ilk are all gone, too.
Because,
you know, people who followed.
Right. Because in those markets, you cannot raise a family on the money that you make doing that job. You just can't. You could back then. They paid you well.
You had longevity. You know, you spent 20, 30 years at a network, and then you either retired, died, or, you know, these reporters that they have are fairly forgettable.
Right.
You know, I think the last time I bothered to remember a reporter was it just so happened to be, she happened to be one of the most gorgeous things I'd ever seen come across a TV screen. Her name's Catherine Eisman, and she was on NBC News, and it turns out she was this Australian beauty, and she went back to Australia, you know, and got married and raised a family. But for the brief time she was on NBC, I used to watch NBC simply because they had the best looking female anchors. Because there's nothing that makes me happier than a female anchor.
There you go.
I will watch Ashley Banfield from today till doomsday, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Jane Pauley, you bet.
Got a couple more. Oh, yeah.
Faith Daniels, when she was around, you bet. Jennifer Vellapi, oh, fuck yeah. So, That was the reason why I watched news. Does that make you a bad person? Hell no.
Oh, no, not at all. No, it makes you human. There's a couple more things to get to before we get to the In Our Head segment, and one of which, you know, we've been watching the retirements, one of them forced and one of them just a three-year squeezing the last bit of money out of the audience thing. Until the next farewell tour, right? How many of the Who had right now? But yeah, Elton John said...
52nd anniversary now, so I guess they're, you know, I saw them on their 50th anniversary. I guess they're doing, you know, Who Hits 53.
Yeah.
You know?
I saw them on the Who's Farewell Tour 1990. And that turned out not to be either. But yeah, so Elton John's going to take 3 years to squeeze every last drop out of the audience. And Neil Diamond can't perform anymore. So there was another name added to the list. Who else is calling it quits as of sometime soon?
Oh, you can call him Paul Simon.
Why is he
nothing? And end of story.
Yeah. Why is Paul Simon quitting? I mean,
because he's old now.
Yeah.
And because one of his guitar players died, and he's 71, and something about kids getting older. Save it. Don't bring the kids into this. Your kids are grown, also.
Right.
Shut up. You know. Unless you make nice with Artie, I don't want to hear a word out of you. All right. I got one word for you, Paul. Cape Man. I don't forgive.
Very nice. Well, yeah, and that's the thing is that will be the next thing that he does for money is the reunion again with Art Garfunkel. And it'll happen eventually. Either that or one of them will die first.
Well, I'll tell you what. Those two are obstinate human beings. And I'll bet you neither one of them will die unless the other one dies first.
Just to spite the other one. Yeah,
right. And I'll bet you it'll be Garfunkel just to get the last word in.
Probably.
Because he's a bitter old fuck.
Well, and he deserves it, too. He did get shafted.
Yeah, but you know what? Be the better man. Yes, you had the orange fright wig and the big bulbous head, but he's a midget.
Also true. Yeah. Little man syndrome is a tough thing to get over.
And he had Princess Leia when she was still ripe, and he fucking blew it.
Yep. Yeah, after what, 9 months? Something like that. I mean, they were not together long.
What a dipshit.
Yep.
Dan Aykroyd should have stayed in there and fought harder for her because he was dating her also.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Dan did fine for himself, okay, though. Yeah, you see Donna Dixon lately. She looks great.
Yep. And from what I hear, really nice folks. So.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Definitely. All right. Well, that brings us to In Our Heads. And this time, once again, as we handed over the hosting duties at the beginning of the program to you this time for our first anniversary, we get to the In Our Heads segment.
David Hawkins Day. Oh, my God.
I'm going to be up against the wall again. I just know it. Nobody's going to ask.
Oh, God.
So what's going on in Our Heads this week with you, Rob Ross?
Well, you know, it's funny. We've had so many fun, challenging, thought-provoking In Our Head segments where you really caught me off guard and have to make me think just when I'm ready and, you know, I anticipate what the topic's going to be. You throw a curveball, so I have to draw back really quickly and find, you know, something applicable. I was thinking of something that we've absolutely overlooked in all of the In Our Head segments, and yet something that's so obvious for both of us and people like us. You know, we're a couple of righteous music people. You know, we have stood in the pulpit, and we have been evangelical about our musical leanings, tastes, hatreds, abominations, desires to see burned at the stake or burned alive or both. But there are, in fact, in each human being, especially as we've gotten older and able to be more outwardly honest, there are songs that all of us have that we absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
I do love. But they're either really horrible songs to begin with, but yet we love them for some odd reason.
Yeah.
It's an embarrassment to if you, especially in the presence of or to admit in front of friends, family, and other constituents that you love this song, where you might have been at one time in your life, you know, publicly shunned, if not stoned to death, I was thinking, what are some of the songs and what are some of the great embarrassments that you've carried around with you that you can finally admit to? Because
wow.
I've thought about – because, you know, we talked about, you know, songs that, you know – have you know meant something to us, or you know, and I got to thinking about it when we did the show, when we were talking about the one hit wonders by people who weren't musicians, when we were talking about Tim Curry, and I hit upon something like Disco Duck, which I didn't like Disco Duck, but I was thinking, what are the one hit wonders from that time that I really like, but anybody else who heard me say this would say you're a traitor.
right. Okay. Well, I can hit you with the one. It's a little tougher now, honestly, because some of those songs were at the time they were campy and awful, but they've almost grown a second life because of the desire to try to be ironic, which is an oxymoron in itself. You can't try to be ironic; it just has to happen. But it's the same reason why. Anytime you see a pub crawl or a bachelorette party happen, you know you are eventually going to hear Journey come out of those speakers, and Everybody is going to start yelling that song at the top of their lungs. That's a shitty song. It really is. It's a terrible song. Let's start with the fact that there is no South Detroit. South Detroit is Windsor, Ontario. Even that aside, you know you're going to hear it, but they're doing it because they think it's funny to do that. So with some of these songs, even though I like them all the way along, now you say you like them and people go, oh, he's saying that because it's cute to like that song now. But the one that everybody, I mean, it was so universally reviled. In fact, there were two, and I think they came out in the same year, that were so universally reviled and heckled. But I love them because they are exactly what they say they are. They are pop garbage, and it's nothing more than that. Is Carl Douglas's Kung Fu Fighting.
Fuck yeah.
Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kids were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit frightening. But they fought with expert timing.
And the other one is Johnny Wakelin's Muhammad Ali, the Black Superman. I love that song.
Well, first of all, Kung Fu Fighting is just a fucking classic for the ages. So if anybody had problems with that, first of all, it was the 70s. The 70s was the decade of the one-hit wonder.
Right.
Bar none. So you're going to have great hit singles from the 70s that people are going to hate, but there are going to be others that love songs that were singles from the 70s, without question.
Right.
Fucking Kung Fu Fighting was a masterpiece.
Yeah, and what did Carl Douglas do before or since? Who cares?
Didn't he do She's a Bad Mama Jamma? Wasn't that his only other
hit? Was that him?
I think it might have been.
It might have been, but sure sounds good enough to me. Yeah, I can hear the through line, definitely.
But, no, hey, I think that's, you know, all right, I'm gonna lay these on you because they may shock you, they may not. And I'm going in no particular time period order, just, you know, embarrassment factors aside. So I'm laying this shit out there. You know, this is me at my most vulnerable, man.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But this is our one-year anniversary show. So, I mean, we got to do something meaningful and poignant. First of all, the first three singles from the Spice Girls.
Really? Okay, yeah.
Fuck you. Wannabe, fucking great song. But Say You'll Be There, forget it. I want all of them naked. Every single one of them. I'm going to go running through them like a sword through flowers.
This time, you got to take it easy. Throwing far too much emotions at me. But any fool who sees that falling, I got to make you understand. I'm giving you everything. All that joy can bring. This I swear.
What was the other one? It was the slower one, the more ballady one. Oh, crap.
I know which one you're talking about, and I can't bring it out of my head either.
Hang on. I will tell you in a millisecond, because I do, in fact, have the Spice Girls on my iPod. So, and I don't care who knows that, because, to become one. That's
right.
That's another, first of all, apart from the fact that when the Spice Girls came along, I thought, you know what? It's nice that women finally have their revenge. Now we get a little bit of candy floss to look at. You know how girls are always like, oh, Duran Duran or whatever, and all swoony and shit.
Yeah.
Now I can swoon over the Spice Girls. It didn't matter that I was already 31 years old when they came along.
Right.
This was long overdue for me. You've got five of the most gorgeous women that ever walked the face of the earth. And Jerry Halliwell, if you're listening, you're going to be mine. Oh, yes, you will be mine. That is, you are still my number one target in conquest to be.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
so close and yet so far.
Yeah.
I'll tell a story about that someday soon. So that's three right there. Another song that I brought up that no matter what, when or where it is, it doesn't matter if I hear it, I'm going to either get goosebumps, start crying, or both. I Remember You by Frank Iero.
I remember too a distant bell and stars that fell like the rain out of the blue. When my life is through and the angels ask me to recall the thrill of it all, then I will tell them I remember you.
A lot of people listen to it and they go, ew, because of the yodel in his voice or because it's an oldie or it's corny or whatever. I don't give a fuck. It is one of those songs that the minute I hear it, you've got me completely. And I do mean completely.
On that same front with the Spice Girls song, a little more recent than that even, and here's another one that I'm sure somebody will call upon me to turn in one card or another because of this. But the one from Katy Perry, California Girls, for what it is.
Allegedly was based off of September Girls. Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, who cares? It stands on its own. It's fine. It's one of those songs that evokes a lot of imagery. And I like that, and not to mention the fact that what I picture when I'm hearing the song is her wearing that stuff. And then it's fine.
Another song that just whenever I hear, even though everybody hated it at the time because it wasn't cool to like it, Waterloo.
Oh, ABBA, yeah, right.
Waterloo just comes right out at you from the speakers. I'm automatically catapulted back to that summer of 74, in my parents' car, and it playing on ABC radio for the first time, and just, you're just knocked back 10 feet by the sheer sonic brilliance of it. And the fucking catchiness of that chorus,
Right.
Never mind the fact that after that they delivered two more incredible singles that I absolutely love for all time, Knowing Me, Knowing You, and SOS.
Right. And again, solid songs, musically solid songs. I mean, they really sound good.
The arrangements on those songs, on all three songs, are beyond description and just absolute stunning beauty,
yeah. Yeah, and I'm trying to come up with a couple more myself
I hate to admit it, but no, I don't hate to admit it now because that's the whole point of this segment. Convoy. Convoy still gets me. I love Convoy. That's a kick-ass moment.
Yep.
But so is Teddy Bear by Red Sovine.
Hey, this year's a rubber duck and we're about to put the hammer down.
If I hear Teddy Bear, I am going to start bawling. That was the beauty of my childhood, was that since we also listened to a lot of country music, we listened to WHN radio.
Mm-hmm.
You picked up on songs like, Teddy Bear by Red Sovine, The Trucker's Friend as he was known. And just the narrative just made you weep about a little crippled boy who the only way he could communicate with the outside world was with his CB radios. for the truckers to, and the truckers all came to see him and take him on their rigs and let him blow the horn. And then he dies a few weeks later. Shit. I'm going to start crying just by relating the story. I mean, it's just, oh man, that was just such a heartbreaking, beautiful little piece, you know? And I love that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't cool to like that kind of stuff.
Right. Right. In the same way that very quickly it became uncool to like, The Night Chicago Died by Paper Lace, which I had the 45 and I've still got it on its
records.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Right. It's in my Amazon playlist somewhere. And that's, you know, there ain't nothing wrong with that song. That's a fun song to listen to. Even some of the stuff by Styx that, looking back on it, is like, oh, yeah, okay. But Renegade, you know, nothing wrong with that tune either.
There are only one Styx song I can honestly say I can live with. Too Much Time on My Hands.
Yeah.
That's the only one that doesn't make me want to kill all of them. Because otherwise, Styx, along with REM Speed Dealer and fucking Journey, those are on my hate lists.
Yeah.
Those are definitely on my hate money lists. But I mean, things like Rock Your Baby by George McRae.
Yeah.
Tell Me Something Good by Rufus, you know.
Oh, and here's one you can add, because again, it just so completely goes against everything I would normally gravitate towards. And yet, both of the songs that became hits from the Proclaimers, I'm Gonna Be 500 Miles and I'm On My Way. I will listen to either one of those songs any day of the week and get a big smile on my face.
And for me, the big no-nos, especially at the time, Wham Rap.
Yeah.
Young Guns Go For It, which is even better. I think Club Tropicana, Careless Whisper, Everything She Wants, and of course, Freedom.
Yeah.
I mean, say what you will, Wham were really fucking good. I can't stand Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go because it's just so fucking gay. And I'm gay in the homo sense. I mean, oh, it's just too cornball. Way, way, way too cornball. That's the only one that's got a black eye. But those other songs, George Michael could write and George Michael could sing. He knew how to deliver a hit song, purely and simply.
Yeah.
He was amazing. At the same time, you know, never mind that their first couple of singles were really cool, like Careless Memories and Planet Earth and Girls on Film, especially the flip side of Careless Memories, Canada, which I think is still probably one of their best singles. But as big as they were when they put out Please, Please Tell Me Now, Is There Something I Should Know? I think that's a fucking great song.
That is a great song.
That is so catchy. So good. You know?
Well, you know, and again, that goes back to Hard Times, and the fact that Hard Times are great for music, great for pop music. At least they should be. Now we're kind of proving that theory wrong. But Please, Please Tell Me Now. And oh, what was the one? There was a song that the Human League did that was also an apocalypse, you know, nuclear apocalypse song.
It was the Lebanon, and then there was Mirror Man.
Yeah. There was one of the radio hits had that sort of theme to it. But, you know, all the Human League stuff, I love it. I think it's great.
Well, you know, but These Are the Things That Dreams Are Made Of was a good song.
Yep.
Of course, Don't You Want Me was a really catchy song. Keep Feeling Fascination has its moments.
Yes.
You know, that's got its moments.
I love the video for that one. That's a great video.
It's funny. Yesterday, Liz and I were in the car, and she started talking about The Police and her favorite Police song being Message in the Bottle. And she brought up the Secret Policeman's Other Ball version of that and Roxanne and how great it was. And it made me stop and think, what would be my favorite Police song? And believe it or not, I think it might be, shockingly enough. I used to think it was always Truth Hits Everybody, but the one that really still moves me is Everything. Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic.
Yeah.
Has that certain something. One of the probably most hated songs by everyone that I knew who loved the Police. That was like one of the big no-no songs. You know, you can't admit to liking this. It's not cool. But that song has a lot of personal meaning for me. So that's why I still feel very strongly about that one. And plus it's a goofy, funny video.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. With the Police, for me, again, going back to the videos, the one for Wrapped Around Your Finger is great. It was just a cool studio trick that they did with speeding the music up and speeding the camera up so that it looked kind of slow and wispy and weird while you were watching it, but his lips still synced up to the music. And the other Police song off of that same album that I just love like crazy is Miss Gradenko. Why that one didn't get more play than it did, I do not know. A great song.
Because it was a Stuart Copeland song.
That explains why it's so good.
You know, one of my favorite songs by the Police Across the Boards is On Any Other Day. But then again, at the same time, I love the Clark Kent stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, Too Cool to Calypso, that was the big find. When I heard that, it had me in stitches. But there you go. More stuff that's not cool to like. I'm sorry. I still really like a lot of the album tracks from the Go-Go's, you know?
Yes.
And that was cool. I Think It's Me is a great song. Great riff. Can't Stop the World is a great song. Great riff. Turn to You was a great powerhouse of a song. And I still think Kathy Valentine is one of the most beautiful, breathtaking women I've ever laid eyes on.
No doubt. And I'm going to leave you with one more from that same musical era and somebody else who was just way too adorable to be a singer back at that point. Patti Smyth and Scandal's Goodbye.
I would have said Kim Wilde's Kids in America.
Yeah, another great one.
You know, she kind of had it going on.
You know? All right, my brother.
But those are cool songs to like. That's the fun part.
Yeah, and that's, what the comments section is for. We tell you this every week to end up the broadcast is leave us some more of these things in the comments. We love to see it. And Rob Ross, that's about all I got, unless you've got something else to add on to the pile.
No, I mean, I think, you know, after a year of doing this as Radio City, I think we've come to a point where it's now really hitting stride. And I think, you know, this particular installment speaks volumes, just thinking about it as we've been doing it. And I hope that those who've been listening from the beginning and those who've joined along for the ride are getting a takeaway with these, you know, and I like the fact that people will certainly come to me and say, you know, I listened to it and I thought, you know, that was a really interesting point that you guys both made. I didn't think of it in that way, whether it's musically or politically or, you know, about a movie or a book or whatever. That's what we want. You know, that's what we're aiming for. I know we have to explain ourselves very frequently that we're not trying to offend. We're just trying to show every angle. But it is also nice to, for once, certainly for me to not have to be pounding my fist on the desk and, you know, doing my usual ranting thing, because what this is really is it's a forum for two friends to be able to have a conversation and share it with everybody.
That's it. That's exactly it. And of course, next week on the program, we will break down the geopolitical implications of Simon Bar Sinister. Rob Ross.
Hey, now, wait a minute. Simon says, go snow.
Have yourself a beautiful week, my friend. We'll look forward to talking to you again next time.
You too, brother. I will see you later.
He floats like a butterfly, stings like a bee. Muhammad, the black Superman, who calls to the other guy, Ali. Catch me if you can.